Thank you so much, guys. Asia and Aaron are some of the coolest and some of the deepest people you'll ever meet, so please don't hesitate to go and say what's up to them at the back. Guys, I am really excited to be here today. I am going to be sharing on a parable, but before we jump into it, this is a parable about a vineyard owner, okay? Last week when I was here, I got to do announcements, and one of the things that happened is Wes introduced me, and one of the most fascinating things he could pull up from his Rolodex of, you know, facts about Moreau is that Moreau loves rosé, okay? So I am not ashamed, all right, of my love for rosé. The reality is, granted, this is how this is how you can take a hint, all right? It's harder to find an adult male shirt that says rosé all day than it is to find an adult female shirt that says rosé all day. So no shade here, but the reality is I love rosé. And guys, let me tell you a secret, okay? The last time I hung out with Wes at his house, all right, I texted him and I was like, hey, should I bring rosé? And he was like, yeah, sure, okay? So it's not just me, your pastor, all right, here at Sunday night loves rosé as well. I know he didn't have a glass, but that's besides the point, okay? He asked me to bring it in. Guys, it's such a privilege and an honor to be here. And I'm not joking. We're going to be talking about a vineyard owner. I'm just going to jump straight in. All right, so I'm going to be reading from Matthew chapter 20. We'll be going through 16 verses, but I'll try and make it as exciting and as informative as possible. So we'll just jump into the first ones. A little bit of context here. This is towards the end of Jesus' life, okay? This is towards the end of the work that Jesus has been doing. So he has already gathered his disciples. They've worked quite a number of miracles, and they've also gathered quite a following, all right? Jesus came, and he was healing people. He had, you know, had all those issues with the Pharisees and other things like that. At this point, they're probably plotting how to bring him down in a really significant way, because that's how big a deal Jesus was. And that's how big a deal the people who followed him were. These 12 disciples loved the fact that they had sacrificed so much and were with Jesus. They knew they were following the right person, all right? Now, as they're coming up to this time, you know, a rich man comes to Jesus and is like, Jesus, okay? So how do I enter the kingdom of heaven, all right? And you know, I've done all the good things. I've done all these amazing things and all that stuff. Like, am I going to go in? And Jesus tells him, go and sell your things, all of your things, and give it to the poor, all right? And he goes off troubled because this man was rich, okay? That story comes in before this this particular setting. And you know, different things happen in this space, but Jesus realizes there's a very, very important lesson he needs to instill in his followers, okay? And this is the parable he chooses to use to get his followers to understand this very important point. And he begins this parable by comparing it to heaven. He says in verse 1, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard." Now, something very interesting about this is that day laborers desperately depended on their day wages, okay? These were not people who had, you know, regular jobs. These were not people who, you know, could wake up one day and be like, I can be an hour late to go into the office. These were people who were living day to day, waiting on that wage or that paycheck, if you may, at the end of the day, so that they could buy food for that night. All right? These day laborers, you know, obviously were not wealthy by any chance, but by any means, these day laborers were not on the brink of poverty. They were living in poverty, all right? These day laborers could not go a day without work, okay? So they're in the marketplace, they're like out there hustling, trying to make sure that they have what it, you know, they put themselves in the space where they get to work. And out comes this vineyard owner, and he decides to pay them, give them work to pay them, okay? Every day they went out, and they were hoping upon, you know, everything that is holy, that they would get work. And it wasn't just that they needed work. It was that they had something to do the whole day, something that would restore their dignity. Because they were not trying to fight poverty. They were living poverty. They were living in poverty. But what they were fighting for was their dignity. And out comes this vineyard owner willing to pay them a denarius. Now, another thing is, the amount he was paying them wasn't a bad amount, all right? It was actually considered a good amount. Some historians actually think this was a pretty, you know, regular or good salary, if you may, for that kind of labor. The reason why they say this is because the powers at the time, the Roman Empire, used to pay this to their soldiers, all right? Some soldiers also used to earn a denarius a day. Granted, they had job security, all right? But it was still the daily wage of a soldier. So it wasn't a bad amount to pay. In fact, they didn't even bother haggling. They said, yep, I'm in, and they went, okay? Verse 3, at about 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again at about noon, and at about 3 in the afternoon, and he did the same thing. So back then, a work day was about 6 to 6. Okay, that was when sunlight was out. This is, you know, summertime, harvest time. This is the amount of time they could spend working in this part of the world. And the first time he goes out there, it's 6 a.m., okay? This is the beginning of the day. He's like, okay, let's get these people out there. They need to go work in the vineyard. You know, we need to get this stuff done. And he goes out and he gets them. But he comes back and he's like, hey, there's still more people here, all right? At 9 o'clock, he's like, okay, there's still time in the day. Let's send these guys to the vineyard, all right? He's like, comes back at midday, same thing. Okay, there's only six hours left in the day. Okay, let's send them into the vineyard. I'll you know, whatever it is, I'll pay them what's right. All right? Comes back again at 3. Okay, now just so you know, okay? You know, I don't know if this is how you grew up, but back home when we used to play, every lunchtime, our lunch break used to be about 45 minutes to 1 hour. And this was like the most exciting time because, you know, we'd scoff down our lunch in 10 minutes. You know, when I was 10 years old, we'd scoff down our lunch in 10 minutes. There was many tens there. All right, we'd scoff down our lunch in 10 minutes and we would rush to the field. And the reason we rushed to the field, all right, was so that we could be the ones who would pick the soccer teams or the football teams we would play with. All right, so the people who came last were the ones who would stand in line and the captains would pick out their teams. Like, I want, you know, Jeff. No, okay, then I'll take Brian. I don't know if you guys ever experienced that, all right? And as you went down the row, all right, the longer you stood against the wall or the longer you stood in line, the more embarrassing it was. In fact, there were those people who didn't even bother rushing to the field because the moment they got there, they knew immediately they would be picked, all right? These are the people who Mother Nature was very kind to, okay? By the age of 10, you know, they could run like an 18-year-old, you know? By the age of 12, you know, they were speaking like, you know, singing like Lou Rawls, you know, like rah, 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 rah. Granted, once in a while you'd hear the, ah, because fairness, but the reality is these are not the people who were picked last. At 3 p.m. on a work day, with day laborers who are desperate for jobs, these were not the strongest of the strongest, all right? These were not the people who, you know, were the greatest craftsmen of whatever labor it is they were doing. These were the people who had gotten to the point where they were like, just give me anything. Anything, and I will do it for you, whatever the price, whatever the cost, okay? And what does this vineyard owner do? He comes out and he sees these people and he's like, you know what? I'm just going to send you to my vineyard. And like, he's just like sending everybody, go, 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 continue working. Why, you know, let's go, continue. I mean, this guy was like Oprah. He was like dishing out jobs. You know, you get a job, you get a job. Everybody gets a job. And I can only imagine how crazy it was for these people to be like, you know what? I get it. I get to go out and work. Verse 12, this is how the day ends. The owner sends out for, you know, it's pay time. You know, it's 6 p.m., time to be paid has come. He sends out and he says, asks those who were hired last to receive their wages. And what happens is he ends up giving these people the exact same amount of money as the people at the beginning. This is pretty interesting because I don't know about you, but if I've been out in the sun all day, all right, and the amount of money I was promised is not the same amount of money as the guy who was picked at 3 p.m. gets, I'm going to cry foul. No? Nobody else? Some of you are like, yeah? I'm going to cry foul. But why is that the case? Because I worked hard. Remember what I told you about the disciples? These guys didn't think twice when Jesus called them. All right? Some of them dropped everything. Like literally, fishing dropped everything, and they were like, okay, I'm going. Tell me where we're going. Show me where we're walking to, and I'm going to go with you, Jesus. Towards the end of Jesus' ministry, they've done this amazing thing. They've built this ministry from the ground up, literally from the ground up. All right? They've been a part of performing miracles. They've like fed thousands of people. The name of Jesus has traveled. The title of disciple of Jesus meant so much. In fact, this is how much it meant. Okay? In the book of Mark, he starts Mark chapter 9. All right? Mark writes and he says, Jesus' beloved, comma, John. So he's introducing John. Okay? He's kind of throwing shade here because of where this story is going. So he goes, Jesus' beloved, John, came to Jesus, and, you know, this story, he was proud. He was like, I did the right thing. I made sure that this injustice didn't continue happening. And he comes to Jesus and he tells Jesus, hey, I saw some people performing miracles in your name, and I told them to stop because they are not part of this club. It didn't exactly say, but that's what he was going at. They are not among the named followers. All right? And Jesus was really disappointed at this because these guys just didn't get it. Okay? In this parable, right, he's digging at his disciples, but in a very Jesus kind of way. Okay? How do we know this? At the end of the day, the vineyard owner is paying these people, and he's basically telling them, hey, you get the exact same amount of money as everybody else. But what do these people do? They grumble, they grumble, they grumble, and they grumble. Jesus' disciples didn't get this point. The reality is that Jesus is trying to tell everyone, it doesn't matter when you start following me, but the reality is this. It's that you have started to follow me. Now, the vineyard owner responds to the grumbling. This is what these guys said. They said, let me find my notes here. They said that the people who you've paid last, you made equal to us. The issue was not the amount that they were being paid. The issue was that they had been made equal to the people who were being paid last. Guys, I don't know about you, But the reality is that as humans, especially when we've worked hard, when we've sacrificed much, and we've been able to achieve or reach a certain point, when you see others at the exact same space, and they didn't either work as hard or put in the work that you did, we're going to cry foul. Even more so, sometimes, when it's things we didn't earn. Granted, you know, maybe the guys who were picked at 9 were the beefiest of the beefiest, the strongest of the strong. You know, maybe they put in the work at the, I don't know, gym, or had been working longer, or were younger. Who knows why? But they didn't sit with God when he was creating them and put together their DNA. Right? They didn't pick who their parents were to get that, quote unquote, genetic lottery. Okay? They were sad that that separation that they had created was now being taken away by the fairness of this vineyard owner. It's a painful lesson, okay? Because a lot of the times we work hard to either get what we get or earn what we've earned, or sometimes it's because you don't want that gift that you've received to be watered down in value. The disciples, honestly, didn't have much to their names. But all of a sudden, they were following the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords. He called them by name. And they could see that it was soon not going to mean that much. Jesus was trying to tell them, hey, this gift that I'm giving you is going to go beyond you. And I think he was preparing them for this, because of how the story ends. But even before we get to that point, I want to share something with you about how I grew up, right? How I've found myself, you know, here in the States. If you haven't picked it up, I'm a foreigner. I'm from Kenya, in East Africa. And yes, that's what's up. Thank you, Paul. One guy. Okay, let me try one more time. I'm from Kenya in East Africa. I'll introduce myself the way I would traditionally introduce myself. Okay, I'm going to use a different language, and that's just the tribe I come from. So, kwa maretwa jitago mureu, mureu wa makumi. Right? My full name is Mureu Makumi, but what I just said is, I am Mureu, the Mureu of Makumi. What that basically means is, I just told you, right, depending on whether, because of our tribal culture and our naming system, not only did I tell you my name, but I told you which family I belong to, I told you my birth order, right, and I told you who my father is. There is a village where that means so much. There is a part of the world where my mere existence is celebrated. And this is normal, right? There are many people who feel the exact same. In fact, I would say there 95% of my country, all 40 million of us, have a village we come from. In fact, it is illegal to come from Nairobi. Nairobi is a city I grew up in. There's 4 million of us. But it's illegal to come from Nairobi because you have to say where your village is. You have to talk about where your heritage is. You belong to somewhere and you belong to someone. All right? Your identity is not in question. You just have to put it down on paper. So technically, nobody comes from the capital city. Everybody comes from a village. Okay? So when people ask you, what did you do for Christmas? Which home were you in? They're like, which one? My Nairobi home or my village home? You don't just have a space that you live in, all right? You have a village from where you hail, all right? I love that because that seems like a word that was used 200 years ago. But I can say I hail from the foothills of Mount Kenya, right, from a village called Gadeja and a place that my grandfather's grandfather lived and my family continues to live. All right? My grandfather's name was Moreo. His father's name was Makumi. His father's name was Moreo. Right? This name has been passed on from generation to generation. Right? Now, I got on a plane and I was like, I'm going to America. Okay? I'm going to school and I'm going to learn a lot about the Bible. I am going to continue serving the Lord in the way that I feel He has called me, and I'm going to learn. All right? And I didn't expect anything different, but I didn't know how much I needed to learn. Because I landed here, and you know, even, I'll be honest, even in Kenya, my name is hard to say. Okay? Not many people know how to pronounce it immediately. But the way they would do it is a little different. Okay? So I come here, and not only is it just not palatable to say my name, all right? Hey, no shade to you if you're a Starbucks barista. But I've never had a barista spell my name right, all right? And I don't hold them responsible to it, but I need you to realize something. I've come from that background, all right? And this was not, like, exceptional. This is just who we are as a country, as a community, as Kenya. Everybody comes from somewhere. And I come here, and my name doesn't mean what it meant there, all right? There's a part of my identity that was in crisis because I've lost something pretty significant. I've lost something I didn't earn, all right? I've lost a gift that meant so much, but it was okay, all right? Because this is a different culture, and that's fine, all right? Now, I'll go further into the undertones of this, and the reality is, in as much as I've, you know, I don't expect everybody to become an expert in saying my name, the truth is, I always appreciate when people try, and that's always, that's more significant for me than actually getting it right the first time. It's that you tried, you know, and that's pretty awesome, because that's how I feel seen. But I went from not only just like being in a country, Kenya, but I've, you know, and this is a bit obvious, but I come from Africa, you know, like literally where black people come from. Like that's literally, like, you know, if ever there was, like, you know, like that's where you find black people. That's, I mean, there's no better way to put it. There's a billion of us, all right? Everywhere you look, it's just black people, you know? And it's the truth. But I come here and I go from this normal, right, and I'm thrust upon the identity minority. Okay? I'm fine with that. That's okay. But this is where it began to hurt. I was on a phone call outside my apartment this was out in Chicago. And I'm an equator dweller, Nairobi, best weather in the world, sunny 75, 330 days of the year. All right, the other days of the year, it's probably, you know, 70. But just putting it into context, and I carry that badge of honor even in Southern California, okay? Like, that is something pretty remarkable about this. But it also tells you how accustomed I am to cold. And where did I go? Chicago. Good job. Fall is beginning to check in, and, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, now I understand why hoodies exist, all right? Because you can cover your ears, okay? So I'm on a phone call, and I have three other roommates, and I'm like, yeah, I don't want to be on a phone call when my roommates are in the space. So it was a bit of a personal phone call, and so I went outside. I went outside. We lived in an apartment complex where the parking lot was right next to the complex. So I went outside, and I'm just walking around the, what is it called? The pavement, the curb, sidewalk. Yes, that one. So I'm just walking around the sidewalk. And, you know, because it's a long conversation, I sort of, like, meander into the parking lot. Our cars are all there. Everybody's, you know, I have other students passing by saying hi. And as I'm walking around, you know, I hear sirens. And I'm like, oh, something's happening. So I continue with my conversation. I turn around, all right, and there's four police cars right there. and in this moment. I mean, I was sure this was a mistake. I was like, there's no way they're here for me, all right? And one officer gets out, okay? And thank God that this officer was who he was, because he immediately knew that this was a case of mistaken identity, all right? He was kind enough to say, hey, I'm really sorry to interrupt your phone call. I can see you're on a call, and I'm sure you're a student here, but I need to make verbal contact because it's part of the law. It's part of my job. And I'm like, yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, I'm a student here. And they went off. And it seems, you know, you're like, okay, you move on. But that was pretty intense. In that moment, I went from being an African in Africa to the object of somebody's danger. And it was painful. Because I didn't ask for that. And I had to deal with the reality of losing this part of my identity. Granted, it wasn't lost. But nobody cared that that's where I came from. Nobody cared that I come from a good family. And here's the painful thing. I don't doubt that God wanted to use that space because I learned a very important lesson. It's illustrated in this passage. The privilege we have is something we constantly need to be aware of. And the more we move away from trying to create separation, the more likely we are to learn. And one of the most profound movies I've ever watched in my life, is Black Panther. All right? And granted, it was a great movie, but honestly, as an African living in the States, the undertones or the sort of like undercurring, you know, theme there of the issues that exist between the relationship between Africans and African Americans was so profound. Okay? And it made me understand so many things, you know. I always used to be like, okay, yeah, I get it's the States. I'm like, but what's the issue? What's the issue here? You know? I realized that for so many people, especially people of color here in the States, they don't have that identity. There is no village that celebrates their mere existence because of the way they look. I learned very quickly why it was wrong to not see color. The problem is not the color. The problem is that black is bad. And that's what needs to end. Color is good. God created color. Our desire or our call is to celebrate it. It was a harsh lesson. The reason why I share this particular story is because I guarantee you there is a part of just general societal differences that you're blind to. Okay? We have this very generous vineyard owner who's coming out and dishing out jobs like Oprah. So for all intents and purposes, this guy is kind of a really good guy. But then again, he goes out at 5 o'clock, okay? 5 o'clock is 1 hour before the end of the day, okay? And again, imagine with me, who's not being picked at 5 o'clock? Like the last people. And this vineyard owner goes out and he asks this simple question. He asks these people who are standing there at 5 o'clock, he asks, why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing. Honestly, this is probably the most tone-deaf question you could ever ask. Okay? This is, I really struggle to think of an example, but the best I could do, this is like going to Skid Row and asking, why don't you live in houses? But the response from these people was pretty significant. In this response, there was so much desperation. These guys are here still at 5 o'clock. At what point do you throw in the towel? At what point do you say, okay, nobody's going to hire me? I'm going to cut my losses and go back home. But imagine, again, these are day laborers. Poverty is not the threat. They're living it. It is dignity they're fighting for. And not just the dignity of a day laborer, the dignity of a day laborer who is probably really old. The dignity of a day laborer who's probably disabled. This is the dignity of a day laborer. Guys, it's a parable. Why does it make me so emotional? This is the dignity of a day laborer who has nothing to show for going out the whole day and having no work, but is still hoping upon everything that is holy, that just something would happen. A miracle, you know, an opportunity to earn something. You know, probably not to go home empty-handed another day and have to look your family in the eye and say, we have no food today. And this is their response. Because no one has hired us. I don't know what the vineyard owner's response to this. I don't know how he reacted to this. But he immediately sent them to his farm, to his vineyard, to work. I am sure there are many people in this room today who are in the 11th hour. You know, maybe you're a dreamer and your life could be changed dramatically by one tweet, not for the better, but for the worse. Maybe you're sitting here and you're like, I have no home to go to right now. Maybe you're here and you're like, I'm about to be kicked out of school. I've tried everything I can to stay above my grades. I just can't. I don't know what your 11th hour is. Honestly, we didn't even plan this, but when we sang, when Alex set up the song and he said he parts those seas, I pictured you. My prayer is that God will meet you in this 11th hour and some dignity will be restored, irrespective of what you're going through and whatever it is. May the Lord part those seas. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the Egyptian army bearing down on your life is. May the Lord part those seas for you. Vineyard owner goes to them and he says, you also go work in the vineyard. He didn't give them money. He gave them work. He gave them dignity and the opportunity to provide for whoever it is they needed to provide for.
God doesn't play favorites. He wants to restore your dignity. He wants to get you in the trenches with you. He wants to work out that which can't be worked out with you. God uses his generosity and his grace to make sure each and every one of us is seen. And the more we connect with that grace, the more we acknowledge that generosity, the more likely we are to have a little heaven down here. The more likely we are to see each other, the more likely we are to connect with one another. My hope and prayer for us here Sunday night is that as you leave, irrespective of where you're at, that God's grace will come bearing down on you like an unimaginable wave, that you will be lifted up and experience that 11th hour dignity restoration. Not so that you can say, look at me, look how God has blessed me. That because he has seen you, that you will go out into the world and see others. That they too will experience the parting of seas and the restoration of dignity that comes from the grace of God and the generosity of God. Because, like the passage began, the kingdom of heaven is like. God teaches us to pray, your will be done, your kingdom come. This is how his kingdom becomes. The reality is, we're not called to create distance between one another. We're called to build bridges. We're not called to build walls between one another, but to start relationships, to ensure that each one of us is seen. Jesus ends this story by basically saying this. He says, so the last will be first, and the first will be last. As you go out to create connections, as you know, as Alex comes up with the band, as you go out to create connections, may you remember that. May you remember that Jesus has promised to meet us all in our 11th hour, irrespective of the situation we're in. I don't know what chasms exist, you know. Walls exist. You just have to build the bridges. Chasms exist. You just have to ensure that people are seen. I don't know if you're here and you're like, I don't know who's going to see me. I don't know who's going to be able to care for me. There's going to be people back there to pray for you. I will be here. I will be more than happy to pray for you. Guys, let me brag on Wes a little bit. Wes mulls and he cries and he just like loves each and every one of you so much. So if for some reason you just can't come and talk to anybody, write him an email. I've seen him stress so much as he walks through the office trying to figure out how to answer somebody's email. I promise you, maybe you can't walk up to any one of us here, but go ahead and send us an email. We will pray for you and we will care for you. Thank you very much.
So as we go into this time of just response, of reflection,